Arjuna.
Hello.
Well, it's Raymond.
Hello, Raymond. Welcome,
hi,
everybody, to the call.
Welcome,
everybody. There are quite a few people on the call, so I'm going to mute all the lines now. So we're going to speak a little bit, and then we will unmute everybody in a few minutes. So, just 1 minute. There we go. Okay. So we're going to speak. Welcome all guests. Welcome Raymond from my good friend from Canada who just said hello. And welcome all other guests. Welcome Karen, who I know is also joining from Canada. And welcome everybody. We're going to speak for about 15 or 20 minutes just to give you a very general introduction to the kind of work that we do. And after the introduction, we're going to shift to most of the call being interaction and to answer your questions. We've got many questions have come in already over the web, and we'll be very happy to answer questions directly over the phone as well. So this work, the deeper love work, which we're going to talk about tonight, really is the birth child of our own marriage. This work has been born out of the sacred marriage which Shamli and I share together. And the way that it was born is really very, very simple. And I think it's the observation that we have and that we had is one that almost everyone can relate to. We met at a time when we both of us had a deep longing, commitment, and familiarity with a dimension of ourselves and of reality, which is somehow free and perfect and at peace. People come to know this dimension of reality through meditation, sometimes through skiing in wild wilderness places, sometimes through making love, sometimes through just doing what you do. Sometimes people who are wonderful artists or ballerinas or musicians come to know that dimension of themselves which is free, which is unlimited, which is full of love and presence. So we had come to know this dimension of ourselves, which is fully alive, but we also knew from our past conditioning and our past experience that this dimension, which is fully alive, fully aflame, that this dimension of ourselves was not being lived in our personal relationships. I had had a marriage prior to my marriage with Shamli, where I was a spiritual teacher and a writer, but that what I was teaching and writing was not being fully integrated in the way that I was in my marriage or with my children. Shamli had similar observations of her own relationship prior to our marriage. So when we met, we realized that we have this dimension which is free and at peace, but at the same time, we also, all of us, carry habits which are not even ours. They are the habits that we've inherited from our parents and our grandparents. They are ancient habits. We carry these habits, and we also carry the intuition of the deeper heart, which was never broken, which is at peace. Our deeper love work is really arisen out of our shared commitment to live the heart's deepest realization and commitment in intimate relationships. So we have found ways that are sometimes humorous, sometimes tender, sometimes disciplined, sometimes demanding a lot of us. We have found ways to bring forth the deeper love, the love which is really beyond personal need, forth into our marriage. We're going to talk to you tonight about the basic principles of how this works, and we're going to leave plenty of time for you to ask your questions about how you could integrate this in your life. So, Shamli is going to talk now a little bit about what we mean by practice and how that is part of our work.
Hello, this is Shamli here. So, as Arjuna was speaking, we have this dimension of ourselves that we could call the deeper love. And as we see it, this deeper love is already here. So when we speak about practice, we speak about this term in a specific way, because oftentimes when we say the word practice, we associate that with an activity that we do to reach a goal in the future, to become better in something, or to be practiced towards something. And the way we use the word practice in this deeper love exploration is that we use practice as antidotes to these habits that Arjuna was speaking about, the habits of the personality. So if you find yourself completely lost in the storm of stress, for example, and you don't feel connected at all to your partner, then we can use these practices, very short, simple practices, as antidotes that brings you very quickly back into reality, back into the present moment, back into the deeper love, which is already here.
There are a number of key elements which we utilize in our workshops and in our coaching with people, which make this work effective. We're going to briefly label these elements for you now, and this will become the foundation for the conversation we can have together here over the web and, of course, over the phone. The first element, which is probably the foundation upon which everything else rests, is the element of presence. You know, oftentimes in relationship we get caught up in who said what to who did what, and we think that we're going to make our partner happy by doing the right thing or saying the right thing. And there may be some truth in that. I've certainly noticed that when I come home with flowers, I get brownie points. But there is a much deeper longing in all of us and a much deeper gift to be given in all of us, which is the longing for and the gift of presence. So a key element to how we work in our marriage and how we train other people to work in relationship is to recognize that presence is a sacred gift to be given. And we have developed tools so that you can consciously, deliberately give the gift of your presence to your partner, not only the gift of your words and your actions.
The next principle is the principle of trust. And this we have included because we see that in the relationships that we meet and through our work, we see that there's so much energy wasted in strategies, in manipulations, in unnecessary protection, that we think that we need this simply because we haven't established this quality of trust between us. I remember when I met Arjuna, one of the first things he asked me was, can you trust me? Can you trust me completely? And I remember that opened for me the possibility of this infinite possibilities of what we could do together. Wow, was it possible to fully 100% trust another human being, to trust a man in intimate relationship? And this is what we have really explored through this work, is how we can create trust. Because the good news is that we can cultivate trust. We don't have to wait until all our childhood wounds are healed or that the other person is completely perfect. We can cultivate trust as a quality within ourselves, looking deeper into how we can live in integrity with our own values. And also we can create conscious agreement with the other, so that it frees up space. We don't have to wonder what is his stand on that. What is, you know, what is his take on that? Or what does she, you know? We can really have clear agreements of how can this relationship support us to open fully into deeper love.
Well, thank you, Shyamali. After you just reminded me of that question that I asked you 6 years ago. Can you trust me? And I think tonight I'm going to ask you that again. So after 6 years, Shyamali, can you trust me now? We'll see if you want to refund.
Oh, you're a brave one.
We'll see if you can trust me now. So the third quality which has been really a very rigorous discipline for us, and I think which we've really succeeded in over the years, is to cultivate the quality of absolute and radical honesty. Now, I want to be clear what we mean by honesty. We don't simply mean that you're accurate in your description of what you did last week. You know, oh, by the way, I did this or that. What we mean by honesty is that there is such a cultivated quality of transparency that the words that come out of your mouth are perfectly connected to what is actually happening within you, that you find a way that your innermost experience can be articulated through your speech. And this is actually a very deep and very specific meaning of the word honesty, that we work together. We've spent years cultivating this in a way that we often perfectly know what the other one is feeling or thinking without having to ask, because we've worked so hard on the quality of honesty. And this is probably the main quality that we cultivate with couples in our intensive weekends, in longer retreats, and in one-on-one coaching. We teach couples how to cultivate this dimension of honesty.
And that leads into the next principle, which we call drop the story. And that simply means to cultivate the capacity to express and be with feelings without being too attached to the why and the because. Because I'm sure that you are well familiar with our cultural, our kind of collective habit we have of being much more interested in the story we have about the feeling, the commentary, the evaluation about the feeling. We're more interested in that than the feeling itself. An example of this would maybe be that, for example, if you wake up one morning and are completely grumpy and irritated, and because maybe you had a bad sleep or something, we don't know why, or maybe something happened in your dream, or maybe something is your body is brewing on some flu, you don't know, but you walk into the kitchen and you are almost looking for things that is wrong. Your partner is there and you kind of are scanning her actions to see if there's anything that you can find that you can be really irritated on, so you can vent out your irritation. So here is where this quality of being able to drop the story will come in very handy, because it's much easier for your partner to receive your irritation if you actually purely express your irritation. You can say, you know what, I'm so irritated today. And you can feel that's quite easy to receive compared to, oh, I'm so irritated, you never stack the dishwasher right, you're never doing it right. It is much harder, and then you kind of lead into a lot of cause and effect drama there.
The next quality, which is fundamental to our work, is that we bring an element of art and conscious creation to intimate relationship. Now, this is actually a somewhat unusual thing. Mostly people have intimate relationships and just let things happen kind of organically, spontaneously, as they do. The way that we've learned to work with these habits, inherited habits that are very similar to the habits of our parents or our grandparents or whatever, the way that we've learned to work with these habits is to find a way to transform them into art. A good example would be, I have a habit, which I didn't really choose from a menu, which I've had in earlier days in my life, of jealousy. Well, instead of trying to suppress jealousy and make it wrong and make it into a problem, early on in our relationship, we invited a character into our marriage called Luigi. And if ever jealousy came up, I would just become Luigi and go, hey, you're my woman. Hey, look at me now. You look only at me, you look at nobody else. I am your man, you see. And as soon as I could become Luigi, jealousy, instead of becoming a problem in the relationship, became an art form, became entertainment. And that's a very big element for us when we teach seminars, when we work with couples, is to help them to transform what they're most embarrassed by into what they can most use as entertainment.
Oftentimes when we start to use the term like conscious relating or or that we come together to heal, or we start to really, you know, we work through stuff in our relationship. We assume that conscious relating means that it will be endless processing, and we will look at our shadows all the time, and we will speak about and analyze everything and ongoing. And what we have come to see is that it doesn't really have to be like that at all. And one of the components in creating a different kind of relationship, a different kind of conscious relationship, is to use the muscle of appreciation and gratitude. So that is the next principle that we consciously cultivate. Because it's so often, it's so easy to focus on what's wrong and what needs to be fixed and where we can kind of look at our stuff. And then we so often forget why we actually came together in the first place, is to fall deeper and deeper and deeper into this mystical love that can grow stronger between two people than you can alone.
And the last thing that we want to mention before we open up the lines and open up the to questions over the web, and I notice we have a few already, is everything we do. I'm sure many of you who are on this call who know our work in different dimensions know that everything we do is grounded in the foundation of awakened consciousness. So I think where Shamily and I met and where we continue to meet is the realization that the realm of personality of a you and a me is really somehow doomed to a certain quality of suffering because of the feeling of separation, of you and me being separate. So everything we do, everything we share with people, comes from this deeper current of awakening. Awakening to a field where the term you and other no longer makes any sense, to quote the words of our favorite poet, Rumi. So this is really the foundation of everything we do, is to help people shift into awakening consciousness, and from that awakened consciousness to find ways that we can playfully exist with the habits of separation without having to let our lives be led by them. I just referred to Rumi, and I want to just read you a few lines from Rumi before we open up the line to dialogue together. Here's one of our favorite poems from Rumi, translated by a good buddy of ours called Coleman Barks. Out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there is a field. I'll meet you there. When the soul lies down in that grass, the world is too full to talk about. Ideas, language, even the phrase each other doesn't make any sense. We're going to start off by taking some of the questions on the web. It's wonderful to see how many people have joined. There's over 120 people on the call just over the web, and maybe we're close to 200 altogether on this call, which is very inspiring that so many people have chosen to join us. Let's start off with a question from Eva Vadenmark from Stockholm. And by the way, those of you who are on the web, on the Living Essence site, you can submit your questions over the web if you'd like to, and they show up right here on our computer. So please go ahead and type your questions in. We'll take them. It's actually easier to take the questions that way than to take them over the phone, because it gets a little noisy if everyone's unmuted on the phone. So Ava is asking a question about, if you're single, do you have any great tips on how to break that situation? And we sure do, Ava. Shamily's just signaling that she'd like for me to take that question. It's true. It's a particular passion of mine. Because, you know why it's a passion is because I myself have been single. Before I met Shamily, I was single, and really desperately, passionately was longing not just for anybody to fill the vacuum in my life. I was longing for a meeting that could really satisfy what I knew was possible. So I'm going to give you a few quick tips, Ava, on this. I know you're in Stockholm. If you'd like to go deeper with us, we will be teaching the Deeper Love in near Munich in Germany in November. You can find details on our website of that. So here's the deal, Ava. If you are single, And I imagine, I don't know how old you are, you must be somewhere between your 20s and whatever, your 50s or 60s. I don't know how old you are, but however old you are, if you are single and longing for a partner, then actually it's very likely you will attract that, especially with the support of your friends and mentors. It's very likely if you want to have a partner that you will have a partner. Now, the thing is, that partner, Ava, actually exists already today. I'm going to make the assumption, and correct me if I'm wrong, I'm going to make the assumption you're heterosexual because it's statistically more likely. If you're actually lesbian, then please just translate the gender words I use for your own, for what's true for you. But if you're heterosexual, it means there is a man who exists today, who is alive, maybe walking around today in Stockholm or Gothenburg or Oslo or somewhere, or Copenhagen, who is at this very moment, perhaps even on this call, who is at this very moment wondering, what do I need to do to meet my beloved? And Ava, you actually have an energetic, karmic relationship with that man already. You're in relationship with him, you just haven't met. Now, I want to tell you a story, Ava, that Shamily and I, we got together back in 2002 in the spring. And after we'd been together in relationship for some time, we went on a camping trip up into the High Sierra Mountains near where we live here now. And we went camping, and one night we told each other our life stories. I told her my life story, she told me her life story. And it was amazing, as we listened to our mutual life stories, it was amazing to find out how much common ground there was between us. It was amazing to find out that while I was in one place, she was in the same place. While I was doing something, she was doing something. It was almost like when we looked at our life stories unfold, that everything that had happened was somehow a preparation so that we could meet when we did and be ready to go deeper together. Now, that may sound a bit mystical, but in a certain way, Ava, you know, if you're going to have a deep relationship with your partner, you do actually have an energetic relationship with your partner already, and you can begin to utilize that. So here are a few tips that I want to suggest. If you'd like to go deeper into this, you can contact Shamily or myself or any of the people we've trained to go deeper into this with you in one-on-one coaching. So the first thing is, I would suggest that you begin to write letters as of today. Begin to write letters to your beloved, expressing your longing, expressing any doubts you may have if you're ever going to meet, expressing whatever limitations you think may be in the way. Whatever you have to say to your beloved, start writing letters tonight and tell your beloved how deeply you long to be united together. That's the first tip. Second tip is, if you are heterosexual, if it's a man that you're looking for, I would suggest that you create an altar in your room which is dedicated to the divine masculine principle. So an altar that's dedicated to the masculine, if you're heterosexual. So you could have a Shiva Lingam on the altar, or pictures of, not pictures of like Elvis Presley or somebody real, but pictures of like masculine presence. And I would like to ask you to cultivate the quality of worship of the masculine, not just, you know, longing for or wanting, but actually find that dimension in yourself where you truly, deeply worship the masculine, worship masculine energy. Like what can I say, as worship. When you finally meet a man, if you are in the habit of worshipping the masculine, you will inevitably meet a man who is in the habit of worshipping the feminine. And that is the deepest dimension where Shamily and I meet. Not just supporting each other or loving each other, but actually worshipping each other. The next tip I want to give you is to actually be very discriminating in where you put your energy. So if you have men friends or if you have potential mates where you can feel it's not really it, be discriminating not to put your energy in a place where it's not going to go anywhere. So it's actually probably more fruitful for you to be home, deep in yourself, communicating with a beloved in your heart, than to be out, you know, flirting or dating with somebody that you don't really feel you can go all the way with. Because in a certain way, you see, the temple must be swept clean, must be really clean and immaculate for the divine guest to enter. If the temple is full of tourists, the divine presence cannot come into the temple. So it's important. You can have men friends, you can have women friends, you can share and be intimate together, be intimate in your sharing, but be discriminating not to date or flirt with somebody unless it really feels like it's the real deal. Hopefully that's given you enough to chew on, Ava, and if you'd like more support, please feel free to contact us. Here's another question that came in over the web, from Laura in Chico. Welcome, Laura, you're quite close to us. And this question is, do you believe that a person that is not connected to a spiritual self can relate to this workshop? Okay, well, I'll give that a shot as well. So, Laura, you know, when you say a person that is not connected to a spiritual self, this is what I would say to you. We all of us have different ways of thinking about that, of conceptualizing that. Some people conceptualize connection to a spiritual self in a religious context. Some people conceptualize it in a context of nature. Here's what I would predict, Laura. I don't know about a spiritual self, but I would say that you have a self. You definitely have a true, I'm sorry, Laura, yes. You definitely have a true self that's the true, authentic Laura, the unconditioned Laura. What I can tell you is, if you feel inclined to hang out with us, to connect with us, to do the workshop with us, we will absolutely, definitely help you connect to your true self. Whether you want to call that a spiritual self or simply your true self doesn't matter. I would say everybody, in order to be able to hear sounds, in order to be able to feel texture, in order to be able to see the trees, you have yourself. Yourself is what is experiencing this moment. But yourself, in all of us, Laura, is overlooked because we are more focused on thinking, remembering, worrying. We're more concerned with thoughts in time than we are with recognizing who we really are, who we deeply are. So the thing is, Laura, that by participating in this way, what we can definitely, almost, I would say virtually guarantee, is that by participating with us, we will help you rest more deeply in your true self. Whether you want to call that a spiritual self or not, we can help you rest more deeply in who you are, deeper than the mind and deeper than reactive emotion. And from that resting in your authentic self, absolutely, you will be better equipped to relate more deeply with another person.
And love itself is so innocent and so non-conceptual. Love is something that I think everybody can relate to, no matter what religious or spiritual association one has. Love is something that touches all people's heart. And in our gatherings, the love is really what's on the altar, and we have no specific rules of how that the expression of that love should look like. What we love to do is just to create this space where each person there can explore how this love can be expressed through each one of us. And of course, that will be very unique. And I'm actually grateful that you brought this point up, because sometimes these words can create a separation that is not necessary. They're just words. And when we look to what they are pointing to, what spirituality or what love what these words are pointing to, it's something that something I think all of us can recognize in our hearts.
Beautiful. Thank you, Shami, for that. Here's a question actually from a good friend of ours, which some of you may know his book because it was recommended in our recent newsletter. This is Raymond Aron and his partner Karen Mullen from Toronto, Canada. I know a lot of you on our mailing list bought Raymond's book, Double Your Income, Doing What You Love, which is a beautiful book. It's actually not so much about money. It's about living an authentic, free life. And Raymond is one of the people that really has inspired us a lot. So thank you, Raymond and Karen, for being on the call with us. And Raymond's question is, I am radically honest, and he's put radically honest in capital letters here, with Karen, and say something that hurts her, then it may happen that will irreparably harm the relationship instead of improving it. And that's a really good point. That's a really great point. Do you want to address that, Shamini? Would you like me to? Okay. So we have, Raymond and Karen, very, very specific protocols for containing the current of radical honesty. You could say something like, honesty is a bit like very distilled gasoline, you know? If it's used in the right way, it can fuel a vehicle and it can take you to incredible places. The same gasoline, if it's not contained in the right container, could become dangerous and cause a fire. So you're absolutely right that we learned a lot about honesty from our friend Brad Blanton, who wrote a book called Radical Honesty. He's somebody we admire a lot. And he once said, he's from the South, he's from Georgia, so I can't help if I quote Brad Blanton from imitating his Southern accent. He said, be radically honest when you talk to people, but don't do a drive-by. He said, don't do a drive-by. What he means is by that is don't just blurt out radically honest things and then leave the room. You know, it's important to stick around for the fallout. So here's how we practice, and we actually promised in our promotion of this webcast to share with you some tools. So this is the first tool we're going to share right here tonight on the call. We're going to share with you a tool called Sharing Withholds, and we're going to demonstrate this for you now. This is how we do it, or we can just describe it to you. So here's how we do Sharing Withholds. First thing is you make soft eye contact with your partner. So Raymond and Karen and anybody else on the line, if you're with your partner, just make soft eye contact with your partner now. Just look softly into one of your partner's eyes. And one of you now, you can just say a simple withhold to your partner. And the way we're going to start, we're going to put this into a context, because the first thing we're going to say is, I have a withhold. So we're just going to say that. We're going to say, I have a withhold. And then your partner will simply respond by saying, would you like to share it with me? Okay, so it's a simple exercise. I have a withhold. Your partner says, would you like to share it with me? And then you say, yes. And you simply say the withhold. Like, for example, I didn't like the way you stacked the dishwasher, or I didn't appreciate it that you left your socks on the floor, or something like that. Or it could even be a judgment. And then what's important is that the one receiving just says, thank you. Thank you for telling me that. And the one speaking says, thank you for hearing me. Now, this is a discipline, a structured context in which to share radical honesty. You're not just blurting it out, and you're also not saying it in the context of a conversation, which is going backwards and forwards. You set up a structure where one person is going to deliver a communication, the other one is going to purely receive it and sit back in the saddle. Now, that practice might actually be a little bit challenging for some couples. It may be you can jump straight into that with the understanding there's not going to be fallout or post-mortem. It's just going to be shared and then responded to. If that feels too much to jump into right away, then you can break it down a little bit. There's a simple practice we can do before that, and this is the practice that we call hear-nowing. I know that many of you already have my latest book, Leap Before You Look, and thank you very much for having that book. So Leap Before You Look is a great book to get started with these kind of practices. And there's a simple practice in there called Here Nowing. Now, here's how Here Nowing works. It's another practice I'm going to share with you now, and you can read it in the book. Here Nowing is like this. It's a very non-threatening practice. With Here Nowing, you're going to ideally stand opposite your partner, just with your body soft and relaxed, and you're going to look into one of your partner's eyes. Just softly looking into one of your partner's eyes. One of you is going to be just softly receiving, experiencing, and the other one is going to give a short commentary on the present moment. Now, I happen to be sitting in my office just now looking into one of Shamily's eyes. So she's going to be the one receiving, soft, just sitting back in the saddle and being present. And I'm going to give a short commentary on what is here now in this moment. So just listen to how we do this. I can feel a little bit of dryness in my throat. I'm noticing the room is really warm, and my body's quite sweaty. I notice you smiling a little bit, and I'm having a fantasy now that you're wondering if that was a good thing to say on the teleseminar with a couple of hundred people on the line. I'm noticing you're really laughing and cracking up now, and I'm feeling kind of glow in my heart because I love to see you laugh, and I love the dimples in your cheeks that happen when you laugh. I'm feeling a kind of relaxation and softening happening in my heart, and I start to feel a kind of almost like a palpable flow of love between us. So that's a short example of here nowing. Do you want to do that the other way back, Shamily? No. Okay. So that's just enough to demonstrate how here nowing works. So that's a very simple practice that you can bring to your relationship. That it just opens up a current of cultivating some qualities. One partner just sitting back, receiving, just purely moving into receiving and cultivating the capacity to listen. The other partner is practicing, not delivering huge kind of lightning bolts of shocking information, but simply giving a commentary on what is here and now in this moment, what is happening in this moment. That's a beautiful way to open up the current of listening and sharing from a perspective of radical honesty. And that might be a good place to start before we work with withhold. Okay, we've actually got quite a few more questions that are waiting in line over the web. And actually, I think we should maybe just take some more of these on the web because there are so many of them. So here's a question that's been waiting in line for quite some time from Iora in Berkeley. I know many people are on the phone as well, and we've still got time. We will also take questions over the line, but once we open up the lines, it gets a little noisier, so we'll focus on these ones on the web first. Iora in Berkeley says, if a partner complains and complains and complains about people's actions and people's automobile driving and about my past actions, what is the most oneness way to respond?
Well, I think the first place to start, I think we all can kind of recognize aspects of that personality habit of being critical or complaining. And I think the first place to start if this should be made into a practice or a conscious way of relating, the first place to start is to create agreement with each other, an agreement that recognizes what is deeper than these habits. So maybe if I just assume now that this is your partner you're speaking about, I will just speak as if it's so. So forgive me if it's not so. But I think this will be relevant to everybody anyway. So if it is your partner who falls into this habit of complaining and being critical, deeper than that, perhaps you have had an experience or an agreement or commitment to with each other that why you are together or why you are alive is for reasons deeper than that, is to perhaps to explore love or to give your fullest to life. And I think we all can look into what that means to us individually. Why are we here? Why are we in relationship? What is it we want to explore here? What is it we want to explore together? And this is a good thing to do when we are really not caught up in the habit, when we are the most relaxed, conscious, in love. And to explore these questions are very, very potent to do in that kind of atmosphere. What is it? What is the deepest reason for why we are together? And individually really feel into what is the deepest reason for why I'm alive. And from there, we can make commitment that this is what I'm committed to. I'm committed that my life is going to be an expression of the deeper love. And then we can look soberly at what habit comes in the way. What is it that I usually get stuck in? Oh, I really know that if I get stressed, it's hot, I'm in the traffic, I get so caught up in criticism. And then from there, it's possible to actually make agreements with each other that we can actually support each other in those situations. So, for example, your partner could actually invite you to support him or her in that situation, to say, when I get caught up like that, when you see me really fuming in traffic and I'm not aligned with my deeper commitment, you can remind me by doing this. For example, it could be very simple, like you can ask me to breathe deeply, and that could be like a hint. Or another practice, it could be like Arjuna was speaking about his jealousy. Right now, just exaggerate this critical trait. Perhaps this is a trait he has from his father. Exaggerate it. Pretend that you are your father right now, and really go into your kind of most militant, critical traffic police self. And in this way, in the exaggeration, perhaps some space is freed up that he can, some humor is coming in, some more space is freed up so that he can kind of snap out of this. It's almost like a trance, these habits. He goes into these habits and then perhaps some part of him can remember, this is just a habit of the personality. It's not really the deepest reason for why I'm here. And then he can come back into love. So the first place to start is really the agreements we can make with each other if we're going to practice with each other.
Here's a question come in from a really old friend of mine. Not that she's old now, but I've known her a long time, Ilona Hansen. And congratulations, Ilona, on being married and being now Ilona Hansen Ruhoff. I hope I'm saying that right. Ilona helped me many years ago. Gosh, must be 10 years ago, on my second book, How About Now? And thank you, all these years later, thank you again, Ilona, for all the beautiful help you gave me with that book. I hope you've had a chance to catch up with my more recent books as well. So Ilona says, "Hi, Arjuna. Now that I'm married, I'm finding it difficult to deal with new in-laws who are very family-centric and treat me as though I'm an interloper in their tribe and that I don't exist. Buttons from childhood woundings are being pressed in me, which trigger resentment, and then I'm not my best self with my husband. Where should my focus be instead when I'm with these relatives of my husband who want little to do with me? How to override the personal pain?" Well, the first place I'd like to start for you, Ilona, and it actually brings a warm tickle to my heart to realize that you're listening out there somewhere in Arizona, because I have fond memories of you. I think the first place to start is to, with what I described earlier about here nowing, to make sure you have a current of really beautiful flow of honesty with your husband, so that he knows exactly what it is that's going on in you in these situations. And it's also important that you know what's going on in him when you're with his family. So that's the place to start, is I would say when you're with the in-laws, because every now and then go up to a room on your own and just do a little bit of this here now, which you can find in that book. And in a few minutes, I'm going to invite everybody on this call to email in, and we're going to send you some practices over email. But I would say that would be a good place to start, is to make sure that you and he both have a really compassionate understanding with each other of what's going on in both of you in this situation. That's a good place to start. And it may be, actually, it may be that your husband really getting it, what's happening within you, and you really getting it, why it's very important to your husband maybe to be with his family, that may actually move a long way towards this resolving itself. As far as how do I override personal pain, as you described, there is actually the best way that I know to override personal pain, which is really intrinsic to Shamily's work with women and the work that I do with the Living Essence training. The best way to override any kind of pain is to move right into the center of it with open embrace. So if you are aware, Ilona, that this experience with your in-laws is triggering childhood wounds, I would suggest that you find a way to really identify what those wounds are. If maybe in a short sentence, like, nobody loves me, or I don't fit in, or that was me perhaps speaking, but I don't fit in, or I'm an interloper, although that's a little bit complexer to you. But if you can actually feel the frequency of that, you can go move all the way into it. Now, Ilona, we haven't had contact for a while. If you'd like to email me, I would be actually delighted to give you a few minutes on the phone, and I can guide you into that process. It's one of the central processes of the Living Essence training. I'd be delighted to guide you into that. Let's take just a small pause now to tell you a little bit what we've got going for you. We did promise you that we would share some of the practices that we have developed that are relevant to relationship. And here's what I want to ask you to do. I want to ask you if you would like to have these practices emailed to you. They will be Word PDFs of Word files and also MP3 sound files. Send us your email address. Just email, and you're going to email actually to, you can send it directly to me, Arjuna, A-R-J-U-N-A-A, at livingessence.com. Let me say that again, A-R-J-U-N-A-A, that's like Arjuna, A, at livingessence.com. All you've got to do is send in an email, and I will respond back to you with some practices from the Deeper Love Work, both as Word files and sound files. I'll also send you a link to the web where you can download these yourselves. Now, the other thing is, we said we'd have a little raffle tonight. So when you send in your email, what I'd like you to do is tell us in simple ways, in a few words, why you think we should give away to you the free place in our intensive, which is happening August 14th through 17th in Grass Valley. Now, this is only for this particular intensive, so it's not like we're giving you a credit to any intensive anywhere at any time. For this particular intensive, August 14th through 17th, if you want to send us an email to arjunaa@livingessence.com and just say very simply, Arjuna and Emily, I think you should give me the place because da-da-da-da-da. Whatever is the whatever reason causes us to laugh and feel good, most wildly, we will give that person a free place in our intensive. It's not the first come, first serve, but we would like you to do this evening so that by tomorrow morning we can notify the lucky winner. So somebody's getting a free place in our intensive, August 14th through 17th, and it's whoever comes with the most creative and genius reason why it should be you. Don't forget, if you email anyway, arjunaa@livingessence.com, we're going to send you practices. Shami, we've got one more question on the web, and I think you were also thinking to open up the phone lines. Which one should we go for now?
We can perhaps open the lines now. They've been waiting a long
open time. Lines? Okay, so here we go. Lines are open. Would anyone like to ask us a question live over the phone now? Is there anybody on the phone who'd like to ask a question? Okay, we've got more questions on the web. Do I have to mute again? Here we go. I think it's probably a little easier like this because it does get noisy with all of those phone lines open. So Larry, I think it may be Larry Cassidy. It's Larry C. anyway in Nevada City. Larry says, is it possible that you can have this deeper love connection with others but may not currently understand or believe in the state of presence? Is this barking up the wrong tree?
Hey Larry, this is again a little bit the same. I would maybe repeat what Arjuna said in the first question and repeat it in my words. And that is again that this presence is not a conceptual, mystical, something alien dimension of ourself. Presence is right here, 100% here in this moment. Presence is what is seeing this voice. Presence is what hearing this voice. It's this presence. So oftentimes, to not know about these terms, I've not read books about presence and have concepts and conceptual understanding about presence can actually be it can actually be easier to connect in presence with such a person. It's quite innocent and open. It's like a child is fully in presence and they have no conceptual understanding about presence. They just are presence. So absolutely, this deeper love is who we are. It's happening despite any conceptual understanding around this. It's totally possible. Of course, if you want to take it one step further and bring these conscious practices into a relationship, there must be some kind of willingness from both sides to do them. That is just the practical aspect of it all. And, of course, perhaps that willingness to do them will have to arise out of some sort of longing or some sort of understanding of why we should do the practices. So that is the only thing that I would say would be required. But it's absolutely possible. I work with women that are in relationship with men who has no willingness to practice, and yet just by her practicing and bringing awareness into her habits, are really bringing more conscious, open, deeper love into the relationship. And actually, what I see is that sometimes so-called spiritual people, we have a flavor of arrogance in us, like that we are more evolved, or that person doesn't understand these things. And what I see again and again, that it's that arrogance is actually a habit of the personality, which is actually closing us to the bigger love. So oftentimes the person has no concept, is more dated in that innocent, pure, deeper love. So it is also something for us to look into.
We're actually getting towards the top of the hour, and we're going to finish our call tonight with a short oneness blessing. If you are a oneness blessing giver, you are welcome to evoke the presence and give the oneness blessing to this gathering, which is actually includes people from Europe as well. We're just going to finish this call tonight with the oneness blessing so that we can take a few minutes to close our eyes and integrate and digest what we've experienced tonight. Once again, if you'd like to receive the practices, please email me, arjunaa@livingessence.com, and I will send you the practices. If you'd like to join us, the intensive is August 14th through 17th in Grass Valley, California, and the details are all on our website. So let's close our eyes together now, unless you're driving. Let's close our eyes and let's invoke the presence and share together the oneness blessing. Thank you so much for joining us. We send you our love. And whether it's with us or in some other way, may your life be infused with a deeper love.
Bye. Thank you so much.
Silently, please just close your eyes, and without any music, we're going to share the oneness blessing now. We apologize for the disturbing quality of sound. just with your eyes closed now, you can allow yourself, without even thought, you can allow yourself to integrate and digest everything you've heard here, and to take what feels accurate and true for you, and let it be absorbed deeply in your belly, in your heart, to become part of yourself. Let yourself take what truly worked for you out of tonight's call, so it can become a part of your intimacy, if you're in a relationship, or your preparation for intimacy, if you're single. Allow yourself to digest everything which you've heard, just in the same way as you might allow honey to trickle down and fill the crevices. Just as you might allow parched earth to be nurtured by the rain. Thank you so much, dear friends, for joining us in this call tonight. We look forward to seeing many of you soon, and may your life be filled with the inexpressible sparkling joy.